I'm just going to get a sound check. So if you could just count to 10 for...
1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, 10.
Perfect.
Okay.
Great. So today is May 11th, May 5th.
Don't rush it. It's going fast
May
enough.
May 5th, 2008, and I'm Sadie Sullivan with the Brooklyn Historical Society. And if you would introduce yourself to the recording.
My name is William C. Thompson, and I live, by the way, I live around the corner, right in Brooklyn Heights, and I'm a member of the Brooklyn Historical Society.
Thank you.
And have been for quite a few years.
Thank you. So tell me, what is your connection to restoration like today?
I started restoration with Bobby Kennedy, Tom Jones, Frank Thomas, and all the others. And we were there when it started. I'm the one original directors of the Bed-Stuy Restoration Corporation.
Mm-hmm.
As a matter of fact, that fateful meeting, Bobby Kennedy called. I was in the Senate at the time, New York State Senate, and he pulled me out of Albany and put me on a plane and shot me down here so we can have the meeting. The meeting was being held at the Bedford Avenue YMCA at the time. YMCA.
Where is that?
I was on Bedford between Madison, Gates and Monroe. Yeah, Gates and Monroe.
Mm-hmm.
And that's where we had the meeting, across the street, and that's when Bed-Stuy Restoration was started.
Mm-hmm.
It was about six or seven of us. And it mushroomed from there. And the basis of it at the time was trying to help the neighborhood. We had a lot of support. We had the big meeting with Bobby up at the junior high school on Macon Street, which was jammed. At that time, I think he was the senator. And that's when it took off.
Tell me about that meeting.
Big meeting.
Was it open? It was just...
It was open, yeah. Mm-hmm. And one of the interesting things that we did, or that he did, was to make it a nonpartisan operation, because at that time, with Bobby Kennedy, we got Jack Javits.
Mm-hmm.
So it was Republican and Democrat. And at the time, we got a lot of federal funding, which really pushed it.
Mm-hmm.
It was one of the Office of Economic Opportunities organizations. But... we were different because ostensibly the community per se didn't control it. Most of the organizations that the community controlled, Youth in Action, Mobilization for Youth, etc., all fell apart.
Mm.
This was not directed where the community itself, when I say the community itself, the indigenous people in the community ran the organization. These were people selected who had been in business, who had done something community-wise, and that's the way the board was chosen. It's still being chosen out like that today.
Mm-hmm.
Most of those other organizations are out of business.
Mm-hmm.
I think that's what made us successful. We did get a lot of federal funding. We took people off the street. We trained them in renovation work, and we had blocks that we came in during the summer. And we do your whole block, the block association. Bed-Stuy had a lot of block associations. And we ran a lot of them, we had so many. And we would come in and take these youngsters off the street, teach them how to paint and plaster and things like that. And we redo blocks. And you could ride down a block and say, gee, it's a restoration block, because the way it was done, the whole block, both sides of the street. And I think 90% of the people had to agree to do it. And they paid $25, that's all they paid, to have the outside of your house painted, to have the lawn done, the whole bit. And it was perhaps one of the biggest programs we ever had.
Mm-hmm.
Then we built some houses up on St. Mark's Avenue. Well, mm-hmm. That was the first Bed-Stuy restoration place where we renovated. And then we started renovating houses all over the neighborhood and putting them up. And it became an extremely successful organization. Frank Thomas, who led us initially, then became the head of the Ford Foundation. Those are the kind of people we had that worked that made it a viable organization, which still is today. We're still here,
mm-hmm.
And most of the other organizations that started out under the Office of Economic Opportunity don't exist anymore.
What do you think is special about restoration that has given
the
it
kind
such
of
longevity?
The kind of people that you chose.
Mm-hmm.
I belong to several of the other organizations like that where the and this is, I don't want to sound elitist, but the operate the slogan behind the Office of Economic was maximum feasible participation of the poor. It didn't work. Mm-hmm. Whether we liked it or not, it didn't work.
Mm-hmm.
You have to take people who are knowledgeable, who are involved, who've been there.
Mm-hmm.
Who've been there, and I think that's what that made our board a little bit different than most of the other organizations, because we've done it before. They attempted to take successful people and put them in to make it go.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that's what every organization has to have. It's people who are successful, willing to give up the time, whether it's Brooklyn Historical Society or anyplace else,
mm-hmm.
willing to give up the kind of time to put it in to make the organization work. That's why I made it work.
Mm-hmm.
It was great.
Mm-hmm.
It was great.
And why were you interested in being involved in restoration?
Well, I was a lot of things in Bed-Stuy. I was the first black state senator, first black to go to the appellate division, first black administrative law judge. My son's the deputy controller of the city of New York. Now he's running for mayor in 09. Do I need any I say more? Bill Thompson Jr., that's my son. Okay, so you can see the extent of my involvement in that time.
Mm-hmm.
We were very heavy politically involved, even with Bobby Kennedy.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah,
mm-hmm.
Sure, that was it. As a matter of fact, before he got shot in California, he called me 2 days before.
Mm.
He's coming into New York. I want to meet with you and sit down. We want to talk. And, hey, end of an era.
Mm-hmm. Do you think that things did change a lot when?
Oh, yeah, there's no question about it.
Mm-hmm.
It changed tremendously. As a matter of fact, I wonder how fast the change is going now. Some of my clients have buildings, for example, on Stuyvesant Avenue,
mm-hmm.
between Chauncey and Bainbridge. The price is $1,460,000. And that neck of the woods, the houses are being sold so fast,
mm-hmm.
and the kind of numbers that they're being sold for, I don't know if we'll be able to recognize Bed-Stuyvesant. Same thing's happening up in Harlem. I went with a friend of mine. She's buying an apartment on what we used to call Stuyvesant Row in Harlem, 137, 138th Street and 8th Avenue.
Mm.
And she's buying a 3-bedroom apartment for $840,000.
Whoa.
It's mm-hmm. the pace is changing, which is good for New York.
Mm-hmm.
It's good, I think. It's good for New York.
Mm-hmm.
But that's the way the world turns.
How does that kind of housing price boom affect a neighborhood like Bed-Stuy that's so important culturally for people of African descent?
I don't think it might change it that much. Unlike Harlem, we don't have many apartment houses in Bed-Stuy.
Mm-hmm.
It's brownstone. So when a house is sold here and there, we're not displacing an awful lot of people. Maybe a family, one or two families like that, or maybe the owner themselves takes whatever she, of course it's owned by Afro-American people, take whatever money they have, maybe they'll go back to the West Indies or where else they're going.
Mm-hmm.
But they haven't displaced that many people.
Mm-hmm.
So the neighborhood, to a large extent, still stays intact, because the new people are becoming part of the community. It's really an indigenous community,
mm-hmm.
and they're becoming part of it. Unlike Harlem, which I think Harlem's going to change,
mm-hmm.
because every time I take two or three houses up in Harlem, I displace maybe 30, 40 families. They're all apartment houses.
Right.
They're all apartment houses. They're not like Stuyvesant Row, which is one family houses, and they're selling for like $2 million a piece,
mm-hmm.
37, 38, or streets like that, the brownstones in Harlem.
Mm-hmm.
If you look at Lenox Avenue, the avenues themselves, there were no brownstones on the avenues.
Mm-hmm.
They were apartment houses. And when they turned them over, renovated them, it's a different kind of ball game. You displaced a lot of people.
Mm-hmm.
I'm not displacing a lot of people in Bed-Stuy.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. So it's a little different.
Mm-hmm.
It's like Brooklyn Heights. It's like the Heights. You don't displace many people when you buy a building in Brooklyn Heights.
Mm-hmm.
The numbers are crazy, but you're not displacing a lot of people.
Right.
As a matter of fact, we have a saying that in Brooklyn Heights, the partners, the law partners live in Brooklyn Heights, the associates live in Manhattan because they can't afford Brooklyn Heights. As a matter of fact, I live around the corner.
Mm-hmm. It's such a nice neighborhood. I like.
I live around the corner. I worked in the appellate division across the street, 45 Monroe Place. That's where I was here. I worked there 20 years.
Nice. Yeah. And where did you grow up?
St. Mark's between Munich and Rochester in Brooklyn.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, in Brooklyn.
Mm-hmm.
In Brooklyn. Yeah. My kids grew up on Putnam Avenue between Stuyvesant and Reed in Brooklyn.
Mm-hmm.
Still have the family house, 768 Putnam Avenue, still there. It hasn't changed. Yeah, that's where Billy lives. That's fascinating times. There's a Chinese proverb that says, may you live in interesting times. I have lived in interesting times.
And done good work.
Mm-hmm.
And
well,
done good work.
I hope so.
Yeah.
I hope so. I hope so. Leave a little mark anyway.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Well, thank you. I don't want to take you away from your party too much. This has been great. I have, if you don't mind.
Release.
Yeah.
Absolutely.
If you could fill out your contact info, that'd be great.